Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast. Check out all the podcasts that are living over there. And while you're over there, check out all the other things that 1517 is doing. All the books that we're publishing, the articles that we're publishing, the academies that you can take for free that we're releasing, all the other videos, the events, all that kind of stuff. You can check all of that out over at 1517.org. And what you can also do over there is you can support this show. I mean, you can support the show by rating it on iTunes, which we appreciate, writing a little short review about how much you love it. All that stuff helps us. It makes us more visible. So we really appreciate all of you that are doing that. But if you want to support the show as in keep it going, well, the way to do that is go to 1517.org and become a contributor. You can go over there and you'll see a little donate button, and you can hit that donate button and you can become a contributor. And for those of you who are a contributor already, thank you very much. You keep the show free. You keep the entire back catalog free. You keep the show free from annoying ads other than what I'm doing right now.
Yes, Dan, I'm in no mood to start doing MeUndies advertisements on the 30 Minutes in the New Testament podcast.
Am I right? This is so the case. I don't want to tell you about Squarespace. I don't want to do any of this stuff. So
MailChimp. Although it's a fine product.
Yeah, dude. You know, stamps.com, you know what it can do for you. Listen, what you want to do instead is just, you know, throw a couple bucks 1517's way and we keep rolling. And that is that's how it's done. Thank you so much to those of you who do that.
Well, Dan, and let me just say, since we're in promo time before we dive into our letter today, which I think we'll actually finish today. If you go to the website, you're going to find a wealth of content that Dan's already mentioned, but also follow us on our social media accounts. If you're on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, at least you can follow Chad Bird there. I mean, there's a lot of content that goes up on our social media pages.
And by
that,
ours, he means,
is not on our website.
And by ours, he means 1517, not so much me and Eric, because like we're not that active on social media.
that is pretty true. Yeah. Although I'm making an Instagram reel once a week now for 1517,
you know.
But. Yeah. But you're going to find tons of videos from Chad on Thursday morning. You'll find Bruce Hillman's devotional on Facebook Live. I mean, so there's a lot of stuff there, too, that you can access beyond the website as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Go to YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Find all the things.
Search 1517. Give it a follow. Give it a like. Do all those things. Okay,
yes.
So, Eric, we are going to look at the second letter of John, we think. That's what people have said it is. And this is a very short letter. And so you got 13 verses, and we're gonna cover this whole thing in this one episode. This feels so much like a letter as opposed to an individual, as opposed to this epistle feel that you get from like Paul or other, in some of the other epistles, right? This does feel like you're writing this to somebody. And so maybe
or to a small house church, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And probably it sounds like a crew of people that the writer is already pretty familiar with.
Yes.
There's very, very familiar type language used in this. It's almost like a little note that he just wrote on a notepad and then sent out. Like, it doesn't have the sort of structure that you would expect in a longer epistle. Like, if you go to a Pauline epistle, you're going to see that there's a structure that seems to come to the fore. This isn't that. This is like almost like jotting down, just like, hey, remember this and remember this. All right, I'm going to see you soon. Bye.
Right. Yeah.
That's the extent of this.
Yeah, that's right. Now, maybe a little brief history here that you can walk us through, since I happen to know that you just taught a class on the canon and whatnot, so I'll defer since you are recently been speaking about such things. But why is it that we would think this is from John when it doesn't say anywhere that it's John?
Yeah.
And why include 13 verses of this note in the Bible at all? Is this necessary? What's going on here?
Well, I mean, it is one of the famous disputed books. So when the church was trying to determine what books were going to be considered on the level of inspired scripture, of words that were actually guided by the Holy Spirit, very, very early on, all of Paul's epistles were in, all the Gospels and the book of Acts were in, and that accounts for an awful lot of our New Testament. But there were some, there were seven books that were sort of debated and sort of tossed back and forth. Second John was one of them. And part of the reason is that we don't have anywhere in this letter John saying, "Hey, I'm John."
Right.
We don't have a signature of authorship. And Paul's letters, almost all of them, you have him very clearly saying, "This is Paul." You don't have that in 2 John, and so there was debate about that. You have the fact that the very first words of the letter are not "the apostle to the elect lady and her children," but he says "the elder to the elect lady and her children." Well, why would John call himself the elder instead of the apostle? There's different theories as to answer that, but that was kind of why this was in dispute early on, as well as the other letters, just for I guess sort of practical purpose, we can list them off right now. You had 2nd and 3rd John, Jude, 2nd Peter, James, Hebrews, and Revelation, which were really kind of the books there was some question about. And yet at the same time, why the church ended up saying, "No, we think 2nd John is legitimate," is a lot of the language in here is very, very similar to what you're going to find in John's Gospel and the first epistle of John, which were never debated. Everybody sort of always knew and subscribed to the idea that John wrote those, both the Gospel and the letter. And so the language is very, very familiar. And then early church history, some of the church fathers that go back to the second century were saying that this was, in fact, a letter from John. And so lastly, to deal with your question, Dan, as far as like what content is in here, even though it is sort of a very small note, it does have content that fits in line with the rest of the apostolic testimony, both from John and from Paul. So eventually the church said, "Yeah, okay, based on those factors, we will ascribe to it canonicity."
And thus we shall go through it, because
indeed. You know? So it begins at verse 1, "The elder to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all who know the truth, because of the truth that abides in us and will be with us forever."
Sounds like
so a couple John. Of things right out the gate, that's John language, right?
So it's like, so that sounds so John.
Yeah, yeah. He's got the abide word in there. He's got love and truth. I mean, these are things that are all over John's writings. And so you can see the commonality in language there and the words he chooses to use. The second thing is as to the reason that he might refer to himself here as the elder, as opposed to the apostle, when you look at the familiarity of this letter, you get the sense that this might be a church that John actually is an elder overseeing, that he's serving in that capacity. And so to this small congregation, or perhaps it could be a woman and her children, that's possible because he does address an elect lady and her children, but most people think that that's probably a way of him describing the church. It is the case that he's probably serving as an elder over this particular congregation, probably somewhere around or near Ephesus.
Yeah, the elect lady and her children is only John would say church that way.
That's right.
What does elect lady mean?
If we do ascribe to the idea that John wrote the book of Revelation, you're going to see all sorts of language in there depicting the church as what? A bride.
Yeah.
In other words, an elect lady.
Yeah, and if you're wondering, like, I don't know, is that really the church? Well, it doesn't really matter.
You know, what's important here is that he's writing this very clearly to people that are Christians.
Yeah.
He's assuming they're Christians because he addresses them as people who know the truth and who the truth abides in, just like it does for him. And so this is meant as a letter to those who already believe. He says, "Grace, mercy, and peace will be with us." That's a little different introduction than what you might typically find. Not just grace, mercy, and peace are with you, but will be with you in the future as well, from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Father's Son, in truth and love.
Yeah, so this is a pretty standard type of greeting, and so that even almost sounds a little Pauline, right? With this sort of grace and mercy and peace. You got this reference to God the Father. You got this message, this reference to Jesus Christ, the Father's Son, truth and love. This is all pretty standard kind of stuff.
And these are all the things that we absolutely need, not just at the beginning of our Christian life, but we need all the time. We need grace from God so this to be accepted by God, favor from God. We need the mercy of God to forgive us of all of our sins. And thus, we need the peace that comes from that status that we have through faith in Jesus Christ. And so this is why those words are used so often in greetings at the beginning of letters and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, peace comes from knowing that you have a God full of grace and mercy. You know, if you don't have that, you got no peace. You might have peace, but you shouldn't have.
That's right. That's right. So now we get into the meat of the letter, verse 4. It says, I rejoiced greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we were commanded by the Father. It's interesting, Dan, that he says, I found some of your children walking in the truth.
Yeah, right.
I was happy to find that some of your kids were walking in the truth. Now, if he's talking about the church, then we understand why that would be the case, because in every church, you're going to have a mix. You're going to have a mix of people that are walking in the truth, and then there's probably going to be people that are claiming to be children of the Father, but may not walk in the truth. And that was certainly the case at this point in history where you had the early signs of Gnosticism coming in. You have, in his next letter, him rebuking certain people by name for teaching false doctrine, things that are not lined up with the truth. So even now, again, you see in the first century, as glorious as the apostolic age was, you see this division, you see consternation, you see division coming up between members of the church, and not everybody's on the same page. But for those who are, he's rejoicing.
Yeah, and whether he's talking here about a church or a household, you can take the same thing from it, which is that it has people in it that don't walk in the truth, and so do the houses of Christian people. There's no guarantee that all of the children of any in particular person, no matter how elect they are, that all their children are going to walk in the truth.
Yep, that's right. So he says in verse 5, and now I ask you, dear lady, not as though I were writing you a new commandment, but the one we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. There again, doesn't get much more Johannine than that kind of language.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this sounds like we're right back to 1 John, right? I mean, this is...
That's right.
This is John's big thing, man, is that we're going to love each other or not? What are we doing here? Mm-hmm. And that we see this like, hey, not writing a new commandment, just reminding you of that old goodie. It's an oldie but a goodie. You know, we loving each other? We doing that?
He never really he never gets off this hobby horse. And you know what? It's probably a good idea for us not to get off this hobby horse either.
Yeah, I mean, because as he continues, I mean, he says, this is the commandment, just as you have heard from the beginning, so that you should walk in it. I mean, this is his deal. He is very much concerned that Christians love each other.
Yeah. And with that, again, there's always this sort of two-pronged approach to like John's goal when he's writing, because on the one hand, you emphasize this love that you have for one another, and yet also getting the person and work of Jesus correct. And so these two elements of Christianity cannot be divorced from each other in John's mind.
Yeah, John,
they go together.
Yeah, John's thing, you know, when you read his gospel and the things he emphasizes there, you read 1 John, you read 2 John, he's very much like, all right, here's what needs to happen. You need to abide in Christ, make sure you have Christ right. You're believing the right things about his person and work, and that is going to produce this love for the brethren in you. This is a big thing with him. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, John's like, there's a true thing about Jesus. Gnosticism's bad. I need you to love each other. That's his whole thing.
Yeah, literally. I mean, it's just like John's got a little bit of the old keep it simple, stupid mentality when it comes to what he says when he's addressing the church. And so he says in verse 7, for many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh.
Aha, there's that Gnosticism.
That's right. This is really that clear teaching of the kind of Gnosticism that was infecting the church. This idea that Jesus wasn't really human. We've talked about this before, but I think it's strange to our modern ears that the first objections to Jesus were not that he was divine. That seemed to not be nearly as problematic. people could accept the idea that Jesus was divine. They couldn't accept that the divinity would come in flesh.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
Yeah, bro.
And so they had to make up all sorts of weird ideas about how his body was just an illusion, that he didn't really die on the cross because, of course, his body, you know, didn't matter anyway. And so you do have, that's the earliest attack.
Yeah. I mean, the first heresy is I'm spiritual but not religious.
That's exactly right.
That's what it is. I mean, it's like I got this ethereal spirituality thing. Oh, yeah, man, Jesus, cool, dude. Like, I mean, but it wasn't like down and dirty in the flesh, right? Nah, this will lead you to start not having a use for all kinds of physical things that would be that are part of the religious practice of the church. So, like, Jesus was not what are you going to do with the body and blood of Christ at the communion rail if you don't believe that Jesus had a body or blood?
Yeah.
Like,
and Dan, this is an issue that is very relevant to us today, because we're sort of, at least in the West, we're living in a time that also downplays the significance of the body,
mm-hmm.
downplays the significance of the flesh, and wants to be spiritual but not religious. That is extraordinarily popular, whether people actually use that phrase or not. And the reality is, Christianity from the very beginning has been an incarnational, very embodied faith.
And that is, and when I say religious, that's what I mean. I mean, like, the stuff of spirituality, right? So spiritual but not religious is a rejection of, like, the tangible things, right? The buildings, the water, the bread and wine, the stuff that is, like, is physical. And these are actually the means that God uses to bring you into his family. And we sort of reject all of that kind of stuff when we do the spiritual but not religious thing by saying, like, I don't need the religious elements or anything like that. I just need a one-on-one spiritual communion with the higher power, and sure, it can be Jesus or whatever. That's not how God ever dealt with his people. It's not the way he ever set anything up. And that, whether you know it or not, that is just holdover Gnostic stuff.
Yep. In one way or another, I mean, obviously there's a lot of differences between, like, the sort of religious system that Gnosticism was in the first, second, and third centuries. But there is still some commonalities in that downplaying of the body, that downplaying of the flesh, and even sort of mild disgust, or maybe, you know, major disgust with the body, is something that has continued to hold on.
Well, this is, I mean, there's a reason that the devil is like uses this attack from the beginning. That if I, he doesn't care if you think that there's, like, something else out there, you know, something bigger or higher. He doesn't care if you think this, but if he can get you to deny the incarnation, he's got you at the very beginning. That's the beginning of all things. And if you can get that, then none of the other stuff matters. I mean, you can't have any of this stuff without the incarnation. And so that's what he attacks. Like, Gnosticism is an attack on the incarnation, the very God becoming flesh. And you don't have to worry about chiseling away at all these other parts of Christian doctrine, the crucifixion, the resurrection, any of this stuff, if you can just eliminate the incarnation.
Yeah, it all gets undermined.
Yeah,
even the value of human beings.
You saw the branch that all of those things are resting on.
Yeah, that's right. It's exactly right. And so John says that those who deny that Jesus is coming in the flesh, well, they're from the Antichrist. He says, such a one is the deceiver and the Antichrist. Now, again, this is important to note, as we did when we were going through John's first epistle, that he goes out of his way to say that Antichrist is already in the world and doing harm. And one of the clear signs of the Antichrist's work is denying this fundamental element of who Jesus is.
Yeah. Yep.
So he says, verse 8, watch yourselves so that you may not lose what we have worked for, but may win a full reward. Everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son.
Yeah, this is a big deal. I mean, John is literally saying here that this is that if you deny that Jesus is going to return in the flesh, and the idea here is that you would deny that Jesus ever had flesh, that Jesus became, that God became man. If you deny that, you can't have God. You can't. This is not Christianity. So you're officially out. So he would say you have to be careful about people who are going to try to deceive you with this teaching, or you will lose what you have worked for. This is that you have been in the faith. You will not gain salvation. You will not have salvation. You will forfeit salvation if you embrace this teaching. And this is 100% correct. If you believe that Jesus is not God in the flesh, you're not a Christian.
It's that simple.
If you believe that Jesus was not God in the flesh, that he never came in the flesh, then you cannot be a Christian.
That's right. It really is that simple. And it's also important to note here again that this is one of the reasons that the church very, very early on is putting together creeds that will teach what Jesus taught, and then eventually gospels, again, really early on, because it's so central to everything. Like John says, whoever abides in the teaching of Christ has both the Father and the Son. And if you don't have the teaching of Christ, or you're not abiding in it, you're not keeping those teachings of Christ, then you can be very easily deceived.
Yep.
So it's impossible to know God without knowing Jesus Christ as he's revealed in the scriptures.
Yeah. And John goes hard right here. I mean, as he kind of wraps up this thought, but he thinks this is so dangerous and so deceptive that he doesn't want you to even listen to a word of it.
Yeah, that's right. He says, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house or give him any greeting, for whoever greets him takes part in his wicked works.
Yeah, look at this.
Whoa.
Yeah, you got some.
That's
some
pretty hardcore.
Yeah, so literally, if this person is coming, do some teaching, maybe it says, maybe, hey, do you got a spare room I can stay in? No. No, you can't support this in any way. You can't even support it by saying, oh, well, this is fine. Like, I mean, I'm going to be friendly with this person and stuff. John says no.
Yeah, and it is important to understand, like, when he talks about greeting back then, it's a very different kind of greeting than we might have today. Just to say hi or something is not the same thing that he's talking about here. A greeting then would be almost an embrace of acceptance of, you're welcome into my home because we're on the same page. And that's what John is warning against. Like, don't give any impression whatsoever that there's any commonality between what this person is teaching and what the church is teaching, because they're not the same.
Right. Yeah. So you're not talking about something that's just like, you might be like, this sounds extreme. You have to think about it like this. This is not what John is saying about an unbeliever, like somebody who doesn't know God, all this kind of stuff. You're talking about somebody who is teaching something in the name of Christianity that will actually put you outside of Christianity.
Yes. No, it's a very, and we do, even though it might not be the same greeting practices and that sort of thing today, this warning still applies to us today, because if we are going around embracing those that are actively teaching false doctrine about the person and work of Jesus Christ, then it's very easy for those who would see us doing that to assume that this person is teaching things that we agree with.
Yeah, the idea here is not that every single person that you disagree with doctrinally, you got to like make sure you never have them in your house. That's not what this is about at all. But what this is saying is that if there is somebody who is teaching falsely about the person and work of Christ, this is the doctrine, the key, the big one, not something else like that you happen to disagree with, that we can have good faith in, we can have good faith arguments about. But the person and work of Christ, they are teaching falsely about this. You cannot in any way do anything that would make it look like you affirm the legitimacy of this teaching.
Yeah. Yeah, don't muddy the waters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's exactly what it does. And especially at this early time, people are are trying to figure it out. And so the apostles are making sure, and you see Paul do this too, make sure you stick to what we're telling you.
And
because we're the ones that were given the promise by Jesus that the Holy Spirit would bring to our minds all that he said.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, this is really, like, person and work of Christ is really the I mean, there's a lot of different doctrines you can say, like, got to get this right. But they're all about the person and work of Christ. Like, there's not a lot of doctrines that you would have to have this sort of response to being taught falsely. There's so many things that you could be wrong about that would not necessitate this sort of response.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and not for nothing. I mean, when you go back to the early church, you see lots of debate about, you know, all manner of issues. And yet the issue that was at the very forefront, was this issue from the very beginning. If we don't get the person and work of Jesus right, everything else falls apart.
Yeah, and
why your creeds, I mean, the three ecumenical creeds that the church universally sort of still says today, the Athanasian, the Nicene, and the Apostles' Creed, all spend an inordinate amount of time detailing exactly who Jesus is.
Yeah.
God of very God, flesh of very flesh. You know, there's a lot of detail given to this, again, because this is the issue that the church kind of stands or falls on.
Yeah, I mean, it tells you what is the most important thing, which is who is Jesus and what do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, that's everything.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what John is writing even this little notepad of a letter for, to sort of shore them up there. And so we come to the last verses of this little post-it note. It says, though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. That's how you get the sense that this is a pretty casual thing, Dan.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, listen, I don't want to waste paper here.
Yeah.
I want to be a good steward of the paper and the ink I got. So,
well, you know, different times, man. It wasn't like pencils and paper laying everywhere. You know, getting some of that papyrus, got to get some ink, you know. He's wanting to be, you know, responsible. And apparently he believes that he's going to see them real soon. So he's just like, hey, I really wanted to tell you to watch out for that Gnosticism. Keep that love up. I'll see you in a few.
Yeah, that's literally the way that the letter ends. It's like, instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face so that our joy may be complete.
Yeah, I think what you could take away from this is that, yeah, why write this letter at all? Like, what in the world? Like, why'd you even pick up the pen and paper, man? Like, this thing's 13 verses long. You say it, one of those verses talks about how you don't want to waste any ink and paper. Why did you write it at all if you're coming? That's how big a deal John thinks this he has heard that this teaching is probably making its way over there or making its way around there, and he feels that, can't wait for me to get there. I got to write this down now and have someone send. I got to get this sent. I got to tell them, hey, yeah, be careful of this.
Yeah. If any, it's just a little note to say, I want to make sure you're staying on track here in regard to these two things. Who is Jesus? Who's your neighbor? Love him.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And then he concludes by saying, the children of your elect sister greet you. And again, could be one woman. Could be a way of talking about a congregation that he is writing from.
Right.
Either one is just fine. We don't really have to know the answer. It doesn't change anything about how we read this letter. But again, it all gets summed up in these 13 verses. What does John want the people he's writing to know? Who Jesus is and who their brothers and sisters are that they need to get busy loving.
Yeah, one of the arguments you could make, I mean, because I think if you didn't have this 13th verse here, it says the children of your like sister, you would kind of think that he was just writing to some woman. But this ending makes it sound like, well, wait, the children of your like sister. So you're talking about two sister churches. You're talking about different churches. The children are the people, you know, the attendance churches, the congregations. That's what it feels like. But you are like, what a weird way to say that. The children of your like sister. What is that about? I think what you, one way to think about that is that this sort of brotherly and sisterly or familial love that John is trying to get people to participate in, like in all of it, in the First John and then again in this is a way to address people to remind them that they are brothers and sisters, right? So yeah, I'm going to talk to you as the elect lady and with a lot of children, and I'm going to say also your sister and her children greet you. See, we're all family here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so that is the second letter of John.
That's it, man. Well, we did it. We made it through all those 13 verses in this one episode. You might be shocked to find out that next episode we will be in 3 John. So we will be talking about the third letter that John has written. We will do that next week and then be moving on to something else. We are coming down to, you know, as you were listing off the disputed books there, Eric, I said, man, those are all the ones that we have left. I mean, we've done some of them, but we have no books that aren't disputed left. So there you go. We will be taking up another one, but we got to get through 3 John first. We will do that next episode. Eric, I will see you then.
All right. Sounds good.